Hello, everybody. Welcome to Inside Geocaching HQ. This is our podcast from Seattle. I'm Chris Ronan. My geocaching username is RockChalk. Thank you for downloading this episode. On this show, I am talking with Annie Love. She is the business development manager here at Geocaching HQ. Annie has been a lackey for more than 10 years, so she is one of the longest serving employees, and she has done a lot of very interesting stuff during that time, which means we had plenty to talk about. So here is me chatting with Annie Love. When you came to work here, were you familiar with geocaching?
Yeah, my dad got me into geocaching back in 2004. On my college graduation day, I said, hey, let's go out geocaching. And
he hid your diploma somewhere. You had to go find it, right?
Exactly. Had to work twice as hard for that diploma. Yeah, so I went out to with my family to the Bruno Sand Dunes in southern Idaho, and we found a couple geocaches out there. And I really had a great time with that. But I didn't have a GPS, and shortly after that, I moved to Seattle. And when I was out, when I was out hiking a lot, I started to think, oh, maybe a GPS would be good for safety if I'm out in the woods and get lost and need to find my car. And so I asked my dad if he would get me a GPS for my birthday, and then he ended up doing that. So in October, I created my account and logged my first official geocache. Probably found a little over 100 geocaches when I started working at Geocaching HQ or Groundspeak at the time.
And when you came to work here at Groundspeak, what was your first job? I know you've done a lot of things over the years. What was the first thing that brought you here?
So it was kind of funny. Before I came in for my interview, Brian, one of the founders, said, hey, we don't have a job, but do you want to come in for an interview? And I said, okay, sure. And so I didn't know what to expect. He knew my background based off of my resume and been working in the hotel industry. And so they really needed some extra support with the community team, or it wasn't really a team at the time, but basically just emails that came in, anyone who would come visit the headquarters, which would typically be on Fridays at 2 p.m., and just answering phones and just general inquiries from the public. And so I started with that and then slowly took on some other roles as time allowed. And then it just sort of morphed from there into where I am today.
I think a lot of people know you from your work with Trackables. When did that start? How long had you been here before you started doing that?
It was probably about a year and a half after I started here that Brian was getting busier and busier, and he was the one handling all tracking code orders before that. So he said, hey, do you want to maybe take on this new project? And so he kind of helped me through the learning stages, and then I officially took it over and have been doing it ever since. So kind of 10 years running now.
We had Nate Irish and Brian on a recent episode here of the podcast, and they were talking about the early days with the stamper machine.
That was before my time.
That was before your time. So things have become a little bit
more... They got easier.
Things have become a little bit more technologically advanced by the time you arrived with the trackables.
So most of my job is just digital. That makes it easy. Sit at a computer and I can process code orders. So.
And over time... Let's just talk about just some of the stuff that you've done, you know, trackables and now a lot of stuff with partnerships, but you know, you can run it down for us.
Yeah, sure. So after I kind of got a good hold on the trackables program, Nate Irish, who had been working with our shop geocaching distributors before that, said, hey, Annie, do you want to kind of take over this project too? You know, you're already working with some of these partners anyway, because there's a crossover between the trackables world and the shop geocaching distributor world. And so I said, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And so basically kind of took over that program. And I think it was shortly after I started handling those partners that my future boss, Tom, who's now one of the vice presidents of the company, started working here and really developing our shop geocaching program. And so previously it was kind of run by an outside company that Brian, Jeremy, and Elias used to work at. And so we kind of brought things in-house mostly and created a shop geocaching department. From there, I've just kind of developed a really good working relationship with distributors all over the world. And that program's just grown and grown over time. So just as people start to realize a need for their region, they'll contact us and say, hey, I want to be a distributor for shop geocaching, sell travel bugs and, you know, all the official products. And so then I'll work with them to get those businesses started.
But with something like trackables, for instance, you must have people come up to you at events and things like that and have questions about trackables and ideas they might have for how it can... What are some of the common things that people come and ask you about?
People ask me all the time, what's the process of creating your own? That's a very typical question, which I help people through all the time. We've kind of gotten an online store now that makes it a lot easier to learn the process for creating your own trackables. And it has all the guidelines written out. You just submit your design. And if it's approved by us, then you'll get your codes automatically. So it's kind of an easier process now.
Maybe you talk about, do people ever come up to you with ideas? Just, you know, there's that age old problem of trackables going missing,
right?
And what people must ask you about that.
Yeah. So I do get asked about missing trackables all the time, and, or just told that, hey, you know, I don't buy as many, I don't put as many out in the game because I fear that they're going to get lost or stolen. Typically, it's just that a new geocacher isn't totally familiar with the process. They think, oh, if I'm supposed to take something and leave something behind, they don't necessarily always know that one item is a trackable and wants to keep moving. So that's why one of the requirements that we have is that the trackable should say trackable at geocaching.com or something to give someone who finds that in a geocache the idea that, oh, I need to go do something more with this item. That doesn't always work, obviously. So the other thing I tend to suggest to people is there's the little printout sheet on a trackable page. You can always print that out, maybe laminate it, attach it with your trackable, put it in a plastic bag with your trackable. And that generally gives people the idea of what they're supposed to do with that item, that it actually wants to keep traveling and move from cache to cache. And I think generally, if you can label a trackable the way that, you know, it's an educational moment for new geocachers, then it's a good opportunity and a good way to make sure that the trackable will keep on moving. And yeah, I get ideas of, hey, you should do a trackable for this thing, do a trackable for that, you should add this on Shop Geocaching, you know, just all kinds of ideas, and always great ideas from the community. So we're always happy to hear them. You know, sometimes we need a little bit more development time to get stuff like that done, but I do what I can to kind of fight the good fight for trackables.
Sure. Are you into trackables as a player yourself?
Yeah, I love moving trackables. I'm not, it's funny, I actually have a very large collection of trackables, but I'm not necessarily a collector. I would say I don't go, you know, spend every last dollar when I go to events and see all the beautiful geocoins. I'm very like picky about which ones I'll purchase and everything, but I love trading trackables and I've been gifted quite a few over the years and really appreciate the collection that I have. I do like them. I tend to put trackables out a lot. So whenever I have, you know, if I end up winning one of those promotional tags or just my personal trackables, I'll put those out in geocaches and, you know, it's fun to watch them move. And I've found I've been putting more just tags out rather than geocoins and had a lot more success with those moving from cache to cache. So that's always fun to watch.
You mentioned Shop Geocaching. Oh, a while back, we had Mark from the shop that talked to us here on the podcast about the shop. And he was just kind of talking about how they come up with some of their ideas for some of their products. Do you get to get involved with that? Do you get to, you mentioned people bring you ideas,
right?
And do you get to kind of help brainstorm the various things that the shop will offer?
We have regular meetings, usually 3 or 4 times a year to kind of brainstorm product ideas. And so that's where if I've gotten ideas from the community, I'll end up bringing those to that. We also have our Slack channel where we can like share ideas immediately. Like as soon as I get them, I'll send a link to, hey, maybe this would make a good cache container, or maybe this is a good tool to trade or whatever. But yeah, the brainstorming meetings are kind of one of the most fun meetings I have because I love coming up with ideas that geocachers will be delighted by. So anything to make the game easier, that's what our goal is. And over the years, we've just kind of developed a really nice arrangement of items that, you know, from packs to jackets, hats, gloves, the tools of the trade, you know, magnet tools, everything. So there's pretty good collection of things to help you get started with geocaching.
Another thing you're involved with is logo stuff, right?
Yep.
How does all of that work?
Yeah, so basically, you know, with my work with all of our distributors, a lot of times they'll want to create their own products. So they'll want to use the official geocaching logo or maybe the Travel Bug logo. Signal the Frog is very popular to be used. So I work with anyone who wants to use those designs. If the item's trackable, we consider the license fee paid in the tracking code cost. So that's usually a direction I'll tell people to go is, you know, make your item trackable if you can. If it's an item you're going to sell, it's going to be more popular if it is trackable. If it's something that you just want to put a logo on a t-shirt, then we do have a license program for that. So, and I'll just work people through the process with approving the design and then helping them, you know, get set up with the royalty for that. Basically, any of those questions, I'm kind of the first person they talk to. And then if I have questions, I go to our legal counsels in office. So I'd be like, Brian, Jennifer, what do I do here?
One thing that's, I guess, newer compared to some of the stuff that we've talked about already is your work with the API program.
Yep.
And we've talked about that a little bit on a past episode. We had Sean Boots on here, who's from the engineering side of things here. For people that don't understand, I always think it's good to re-explain what the API program is.
Right.
So how do you explain it to people?
So basically, the API allows developers access to the data that we have on geocaching.com. So, and it might be a limited amount of data, but it's something that they can create tools that are useful for the community to help play the game. So maybe it helps enhance your cache outing by planning tools, or maybe it's just that, you know, you want to use a different app to go geocaching. So maybe like Cachely or GeoLive, you know, we're more than happy for people to use any of our partner applications and just access that same data through a different channel. And, you know, sometimes they will create tools that are something that the community really wants that we just don't have the time to get to, or maybe it's just not the main focus that we want on our own tools that we create. And so Cachely, for example, has a nice little first to find button.
Right.
So you can be looking at the map and see if there's any caches that haven't been found yet. And, you know, for those first to find hounds, that's going to be a great tool for them to go use. And that's just something we haven't had time to implement in our own app. And so, yeah, so I basically work with all the partners that create those applications or people who are interested in wanting to develop new ones. And our API program has been closed off for a few years. So the partners that have been in there for quite a while. And so they've had time to really develop things, but we are currently switching over to a new API program or a new API altogether. And with that, we want to start slowly opening up our API program to new partners. So I created a link where you can go get on our wait list to, if you're a developer and want to create something based off of our API, then you can submit your name on the wait list. And you know, if it's something that we feel will be relevant to a big variety of geocachers, then it's something we might consider.
Yeah, so you mentioned Cachely, there's GeoLive, there's things like Project GC,
yep.
GSAC,
yep.
And these are all authorized developers,
yep.
right?
Yep.
And there's a place on the, I think it's in our help center or on the website where you can go and actually read more about it, and
yep.
and we'll link that in the podcast
yeah,
notes. But
yeah, we have a whole API page that has a little bit more information and links to some of the partners that we have. Yeah, it's amazing what some of these partners have done. Like Project GC, I use almost on a daily basis to, you know, decide what my next geocaching challenge is going to be for myself, or check however I'm doing on my Jasmer. I love the challenge checkers on there, you know, just to see if I qualify for certain challenges, you know. And GSAC obviously like is great for doing power trails. You know, it's easy to log hundreds or thousands of caches all at once, you know, with the push of a button. So some of those tools for the more experienced geocacher, like we can't live without those tools. And it's just wonderful that we have a program that we can provide to developers to create tools like that. And I highly encourage you to check out all of our partner apps and see if one of those fits for you. Speaking of trackables, there's TB Scan, which is actually a really great one that you can just scan the tracking code on a trackable and discover it right away. And so that just makes when you go to an event where people have their books full of trackables, you're like, it's a lot quicker to discover a lot of trackables that way.
Yeah, I think there's still a misconception out there with some people that somehow something like a Project GC or a GSEC, that it's a competitor of, of geocaching.com, and therefore we speak about it in hushed tones. And that's certainly not the case. So I think any time we can explain the process a little bit better, it's helpful for everybody.
Yeah, I'm part of lots of Facebook geocaching groups, all over the world. And probably a couple years ago, whenever I'd see posts about Cachely, it was like, ooh, can't talk about this, whatever, Oh, I like this app better than the HQ app or whatever. And it's been nice because I think we've been more transparent lately about the fact that these are partner apps. These are people that are working with us. They're using our API under a licensed agreement. We're happy to support them, and we'll do whatever we can to continue to support them. And if that's your preferred app or your preferred tool for your caching, that's great. We don't have time to do everything that we would want to do. And so that's where it's really important for us to have these community partners that are able to create those tools.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention that when people go to shop geocaching, they see all these beautiful photos. A lot of those are courtesy of you.
Yeah. So I have a longtime photographer hobby. And I just, back probably in the, I always call it the Fifth Avenue office days. So that's basically the first 2 years that I started at what was known as Groundspeak. At one point, Brian was like, hey, you have a nice camera, don't you? And I was like, yeah, sure. Well, can you bring it in and take a picture of a t-shirt? And so that became my career at HQ, being one of our official photographers. So I've really kind of developed my skill set over time of product photography. I had no clue what to do with it when I first started. And I've kind of done some reading online and learned how to take pictures of shiny coins, which is not very easy. And basically typically any of the banner ads that you see on geocaching.com for shop geocaching, those are my photos, and those are typically lackeys in the photos. So it's kind of fun to take a little break from, sitting at a desk and head outside and take some pictures with some of my fellow lackeys showing off new products.
But yeah, we're not hiring big name models.
No.
Here.
I don't know, mountain bike.
Mountain bike is a pretty demanding person, right. So I could see where
yep. That's kind of one of the fun things. Like if you do go look through those ads, that's someone that's helping to make this game happen. So that's kind of fun. And I know I never have a shortage of models here at the office. Everyone's typically willing and able to help me out with that.
And it's not, and I have to say, it's not just products that you do this with. You're called into, you're asked, begged to help on any number of projects around the office.
I've taken many headshots, team photos, whatever comes up. So I'm always happy to try new types of photography. So it's a personal passion of mine. Obviously with cell phone technology, most of the time I'm using just my cell phone to take pictures these days, but it's nice to have the opportunity to use a real camera, put some thought into a photo, and get to apply another hobby to my job.
When you were talking about partner stuff, an exciting project that you got a chance to work on recently that people are going to be hearing about, I imagine, around the community associated with Geo Woodstock, that the GPS maze will be making an appearance in the United States.
Yeah, so we've been asked by some, geocachers around the world, like, hey, what can we do to have the GPS maze? It was originally something that was developed with a partnership of ours directly here in Seattle, and it just sort of faded out over time, and the panels were never updated, and so we just made the choice to not continue sending that maze around. But the Czech Geocaching Association put together this beautiful maze that's been at certain mega events over in Europe, and since then we've had a few people asking, like, hey, how do we get the GPS maze to our event? And essentially we've told them, well, if you have the budget and, the time and the expertise, you could build one. And so we're really excited because Geo Woodstock this year will have the first GPS maze since, I believe, 2014 in the United States. And so it'll be a good chance for people to get that icon again. And, nice to have something back in the U.S. Geocachers have had to fly over to Europe if they've wanted to get that icon. So I imagine a few people will be doing some icon runs in Fort Worth in May. I'm really excited to see what the Geo Woodstock committee puts together in the maze. So I'm hoping I can make it down for that event and check it out in person too. So
Yeah, that's one of my favorite memories, is going to the GPS maze when it was in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
In 2014 at the Corvette Museum that had just had a sinkhole problem.
That's so crazy.
And so it was amazing walking into this museum and beautiful Corvettes everywhere. And then there was this area you could see behind some yellow tape, you know, they had marked that the sinkhole.
And, oh no. It's like, oh my gosh. You hope that sinkhole doesn't get bigger while you're there.
Right. And then you, so you could take a left to see the sinkhole or take a right to see the GPS maze.
Well, there you go.
It was quite a day that still is stuck in my memory.
Should have made an earth cache out of that sinkhole.
Oh my gosh. Right. So as for your personal geocaching, it's so great that you've been, I've had people ask me before, when you work at a place like this, and you're around geocaching all the time, it's such a fun game, but even so, if it's your job all day, do you eventually get tired of, you just want to go home and not, and do something else? But there are plenty of us here that doesn't apply to. We're crazy about it anyway, and you're certainly one of those people.
Yeah, I think I actually love geocaching a lot more now by working here. It was just kind of a fun thing that I added to hiking before, and that's pretty much the only time I would go do it, or if I was discovering a new park in the city of Seattle or something. Since I've started working here, I've discovered going to events, meeting new friends all over the world, and, you know, through tools like Project GC, some challenges, you know, I've created personal goals for myself for geocaching. Like last year, I challenged myself to find 2018 geocaches in 2018. I kind of surpassed that. I think I found 2042. It's definitely a passion of mine. I've been inspired by all the people that I talk to constantly who are telling me about, hey, there's this cool event in this location, or, you know, we just placed this earth cache on this amazing, like, geological thing. I don't know. I just, all the inspiration every day, like, yes, my job is a desk job, but it's just, it really fuels my passion for the game. This year, I'm hoping to get to 10,000 cache finds, so the goals don't end with it. I often plan my personal vacations around geocaching, so I actually just got back from Copenhagen, where I spent 3 days geocaching, hanging out each night with different, either local or other European geocachers, and just had a blast. You know, it was a really great way to see the city. And then when I went out geocaching with the local cachers, they took me to some phenomenal geocaches. And, you know, just those kind of fun aha moments when you see an amazing cache, like whether it's in your backyard or in another country, it's just really cool.
That was Annie Love, Geocaching HQ's business development manager. If you have an idea for us to cover on Inside Geocaching HQ, send us an email. podcast@geocaching.com is the address. Once again, that is podcast@geocaching.com. I always appreciate your ideas and feedback about our podcast. And from me and everyone at Geocaching HQ, happy caching.